Some killers attack complete strangers. Some target the vulnerable, the young, or the elderly. And some prey on people that they know. There are killers who are inspired by money or by revenge, by sexual deviancy, by hatred. There are opportunists and there are meticulous planners. But what unites these men and women is one simple trait, and it's the most terrifying thing of all. They live amongst us. In our towns, on our streets, in our houses. They're just like the rest of us, but capable of evil. And they could be anywhere. Welcome to Murder Town.
Do you feel it in the air? Oh.
Every city in Britain can play host to murder. And tonight we examine the horrific crimes that have haunted Brighton. And we find out how killers sometimes can't help but talk about their crimes.
You could never really trust the devil. The devil plays games.
Suffolk Police, what's your emergency?
Hi, I need to be sectioned under the Mental Health Act.
You do wonder what it takes for someone to reach a point where the pressure builds up and something terrible happens.
Got a shotgun in my hand.
There I am. I'm the devil.
He has decided she must die.
From here, so I know the patch. It's exciting. There's, you know, good hard news stories. There's a lot of crime, but as a journalist, you know, it's important to cover these stories. And yeah, it's a good patch. I came in about midday. There'd been a murder in Hollingbury. Hollingbury is a really lovely area. Last place you'd expect someone to get murdered. When forensics, scenes of crime officers, when they're there, you instantly know something major's happened. For anyone, that's a complete shock, whether you're a journalist or just a resident, part of the community. First thing we have to do is try to find out who the victim is and what's happened to, is someone a murderer on the loose? You know, we got to get that information out as soon as possible.
The victim was Gillian Howell, who'd been found with multiple stab wounds in her own home.
Details about her started coming out quite quickly, you know, once the police named the victim. With social media nowadays, we actually found out where she worked. So you go to them for a comment and that's how you start understanding who the person is.
Jill House was a very well-liked and much-loved woman. She was a payroll supervisor. She was running a department at one of the local universities, at Brighton University. In her spare time, she volunteered for the Samaritans and helped train and recruit people to listen to others' problems.
She sounds an incredible woman. Brighton Hove Albion season ticket holder. One fan actually did pay a tribute to her. I think he left flowers on her seat or something, someone that she sat close to. So all these people it's affecting, and someone's lost a sister, a daughter, a colleague, you know, a friend. Murder, especially one such as this, is just so, so heinous.
Even after killing Jill, the murderer crouched over the body and wrote the word bully on his victim's forehead.
Scrawling the word bully on her forehead, leaving her to die absolutely without any dignity, is just that for me is the most chilling part about this murder. It was just, that is absolutely horrendous.
The killer had used extreme violence. The community was struggling to cope with the news.
But no one quite expected what was about to come.
Sussex Police, what's your emergency?
Hi, I need to be sectioned under the Mental Health Act. Got a shotgun in my hand.
Brighton is beautiful. It's got Regency facades along the seafront, which stretch for a good couple of miles. Behind that seafront facade, though, there are also some more challenging estates.
Every place has certain areas that are maybe deprived areas of the city that see higher levels of crime. On the whole, everyone gets on really well, and it's a diverse community here.
It's a real magnet for people of all sorts. If you're troubled, if you're drifting, Brighton's quite a friendly place, to be honest. It's quite an accepting place. It's very easy to come to Brighton, melt into the crowd, if you like. You could almost vanish off the face of the earth and live quite quietly.
In 2017, police in Brighton had sealed off a property after the grim discovery of a body. The victim was Gillian Howell, a popular local woman who had apparently been the victim of a stabbing. Now, word of the police activity was starting to spread.
The fact that this is, it's such a sort of tight-knit community around there, with schools in the area, shops at the end of her road, and obviously people she knew in the area would have known what she was like as a person, and she sounds an incredible woman. She's a Samaritan, a Brighton Hove Albion season ticket holder, and just, you know, what an incredible person you've got to be to give up your time to help support people with mental health issues. And instantly, knowing that, you sort of think, what could she have done to prompt this? And is it something to do with someone who has mental health issues or someone she may have helped? Which it unraveled that was sort of the case, yeah.
It's quite traditional for Brighton to have people like me. It's not just a business. You have to be very responsible, because you deal with people's problems that you would never believe, that they've never told a soul. Good or bad, I like to know about it. You can tell me absolutely everything. I recognised him. I'd seen him maybe 6-8 months before. I usually do recognise my customers, so it's fine. It wasn't a problem before. he asked for a double reading, which is always an indication that it's going to be tricky, that there's a lot to deal with.
The man in front of Jane was 50-year-old Star Randall Hansen.
Very little was known about Star Randall Hansen by people around here. He went to a spiritualist church, and he, again, I don't know whether, you know, many people go, people go to churches and to organisations like that for very many different reasons, but my suspicion is that not having many friends, you know, and having been befriended might be one of the reasons that he went, and having a small circle of friends. There was no support, you know, he didn't really have the support mechanism that those of us who have families can rely on. What brought him here, I still don't know, but I think if you're troubled, if you're drifting, Brighton's quite a friendly place, to be honest. It's quite an accepting place, you know, there's a tolerance.
He started the same day as I did. I think he was permanent. I think he was full-time. I was part-time, because I was a student. He didn't really speak about himself at all. He was quite mysterious in that sense. He didn't really speak about his personal life or anything. I remember once he had a row with one of the managers, and he was a bit standoffish with her. He was quite a silent, aggressive person when he wanted to be. I'd be wary around him.
Star Randall Hansen is a fairly physically imposing man. And you, again, if you're rubbing along with somebody, probably that doesn't matter. If you end up with conflict with somebody like that, you're all of a sudden faced with, actually, someone who is incredibly imposing and threatening for you.
Now he was apparently keen to discover what his future had in store. Though Jane sensed there was more to Star's visit.
Star was not mentally ill. I think he was vulnerable. But also no angel, under any way. This is not an angel. So I start the reading. I shuffled the cards and I gave them to him, and he shuffled the cards, which is the usual procedure. I spread the cards and he took 10 cards. So the cards are put to one side and I started putting the cards out. This is called the Fallen Tower, the Blasted Tower. Because the actual roof comes off the house, it's a serious argument. It's not just your little arguments. This is a huge fallout. And you can see two people falling out of different sides of the house, the ceiling being, the roof being blown off, and all the debris falling down. And so what the card means is that it's a huge loss of stability, ending of friendships, and a really complete and sudden change in that situation.
Star Randall Hansen wasn't really rooted in the community, didn't really know that many people, and he was staying with someone who'd become friends with, called Derek Marnie. I don't know the exact nature of the relationship between Derek Marnie and Star Randall Hansen, and I'm not sure if anybody does really, but they were... they moved in spiritualist circles, if you like. They were both involved with the spiritualist church. And my suspicion is that Derek Marnie showed kindness to Star Randall Hansen. You know, he helped him out. He was a place to, you know, he had a place to stay sometimes. They obviously got along together for quite some time. They were friends for you know, many, many months. But however good their friendship was, it turned very bad.
The devil card is the temptation in life to take that bit more. You could never really trust the devil. The devil plays games. And what the devil does is it plays against two people as well. When he saw the devil card, I said to him, you know, this is the devil card, and you know. And he said, and he cried, and he said, it's really bad. It's really, really bad. I said, I can see that it's really bad, but what we need to do is that we need to talk about this. You know, there's nothing going to shock me here, but come on now, let's get it out. Let's just put it on the table.
The card suggested that Brighton was home to a devil, and Jane Braden had just come face to face with him, but she wouldn't believe what he was about to say next. In 2015, tarot card reader Jane Braden had been giving a reading to one of her regular clients.
The man in front of Jane was 50-year-old star Randall Hansen.
But when she turned over the devil card, he began to weep. And before long, Jane would be hearing his full story.
Because of the spiritual side, I think seeing the devil card, that was the card that was a pinnacle that he knew. I can't hide this. That's me. There I am. I'm the devil.
As a reporter, you see a lot of people. You've got a criminal record as long as your arm. Star Randall Hansen wasn't one of those people. He was staying with somebody he'd become friends with called Derek Marnie. That relationship fell apart very, very quickly. And you do wonder what it takes for someone to just reach a point where the pressure builds up and something snaps inside them and something terrible happens.
He said, I killed him. Actually saying it was like a gush of relief, but also of tremendous fear. That was the moment that he knew there was no going back.
I suspect he wanted to get it off his chest in what he probably thought was a safe environment. But she was a pretty calm and collected woman who managed to keep him talking, buy some time, and very bravely, I think, told him, I'm going to have to tell the police.
I said, look, I'm not scared of you. You don't need to run. I'm absolutely fine with this. We just need to talk about it. And I said, you know, there are some things that I can keep to myself, but this isn't one of them. And I know that the only way you can live a life now is by me going to the police as well, and let's get it out. So I rang the police. I said that I was a tarot reader. I have a man in that's committed murder. The body has not been found, and I'd like you to send someone down. I knew instantly they didn't believe me.
Star Randall Hansen had made an emotional confession of murder to a tarot card reader, and now police were set to find out if his claims were true.
Star Randall Hansen got into an argument with Derek Marnie in the kitchen of Derek Marnie's flat in the centre of Brighton. And plunged a knife into his side. Whether or not you mean to kill somebody, once you've done it, you have to work out what you do next. And in Star Randall Hansen's case, he hasn't tried to dispose of the body, but he hasn't called the police. Somehow, for the next 10 days, Derek Marnie's body went undiscovered. Star Randall Hansen went about his life as normal. He seems to have spent the next 10 days just living in the flat. The pressure must have been bottling up inside him and building and building, because eventually he took himself off and he poured out his story.
I knew that what I was seeing was true. I've never would be steered something like that if it wasn't true and meaningful. And that's why I had no problem telling the police that there'd been a murder and that the man inside my shop had committed that. No doubts whatsoever, not in any way, shape or form.
The first thing I'm sure the police will have done is A, establish the body's dead, that wouldn't have been hard. B, try to find out how that person died. And obviously you get a post-mortem examination by a forensic pathologist to do that. And then it's trying to work out who killed him. When you've got someone who's confessed, what have they been up to in that time and why? And I think to me, it says a lot about the sort of star Randall Hansen that, that we don't know. We've never really got to the bottom, of, other than there was a falling out, it seems, in the spur of the moment. And this very big guy killed his older, smaller friend. You often hear people when they've, you know, killed somebody trying to claim, I wasn't in my right mind. It wasn't murder, it was manslaughter on the ground of diminished responsibility, that kind of thing. And you do wonder whether anyone would kill anybody in their right mind. And I guess it's a question of degree then, you know, how much motivation, how much premeditation was there, and how much remorse have you shown in terms of, did you try to get medical help for that person before their life ebbed away?
He could have saved Derek. He was first aid trained, he could have stemmed that, he could have saved it. But he didn't. He actually chose a bigger knife to do more damage, and he actually went through every organ up the man's back as Derek turned. So he had the opportunity to stop. You can say, okay, a moment of madness. But there was an instigation that he actually changed the knife he was using to do more damage. And so then you have to look at it and think, actually, you know, this is tricky.
His friend died without help, without medical assistance, and was just left there for the next 10 days while this guy carried on his life.
Despite having a confession and recovering the victim's body, Sussex police still needed to build a complete case against Star Randall Hansen.
It's very easy when you've got an open and shut case, I think, for a detective to be complacent. In this case, you've got someone admitting the killing, but not pleading to murder. And there is still, I think, a desire to get justice for a victim. But I think one of the things we have seen in this case was a determination, even with the sort of the great information I had on one level, the confession, the body, the forensic information, they did make sure that they did justice to Derek Marnie, I think. Star Randall Hansen was sentenced to life with a minimum term of 18 years. Life doesn't mean life for most people convicted of murder or killing somebody else. Given his age, he'll be in his mid-late 60s at least before he's considered eligible for parole. I think it's astonishing how many times murder cases and cases of serious violence involve somebody who doesn't have a long record of offending, somebody who isn't known for being violent. And for one reason or another, the pressure has built up, sometimes over a long period of time, sometimes very quickly, and you've seen some kind of outburst or eruption. And in that instant, a life is lost.
In 2009, Neil McMillan strangled a woman he'd met for sex before setting her flat ablaze. He was jailed for 22 years. And in 2010, 21-year-old Sean Iran took advantage of a drug user, badly beating him before setting his body alight and dumping it on a golf course. But in 2017, Brighton once again noticed police activity after the grim discovery of a body. The victim was Gillian Howell, a popular local woman who had apparently been the victim of a stabbing.
Sussex Police, what's your emergency?
Hi, I need to be sectioned under the Mental Health Act. I'm at John Street Police Station, but I can't seem to get in there to speak to somebody.
Okay.
So, if possible, first.
Have you called Have you called an ambulance?
No, I don't need an ambulance.
If you need to be sectioned, then that's the best place people to be with you, is the ambulance.
Well, I've got a shotgun in my hand, so it's probably not the best idea. It's not loaded, and it's covered, and it's safe. But I tried to commit suicide, and I don't want to hand it in.
Okay. No, that's fine. You didn't say that. That's the place to be then, isn't it? The police station. Mm. What's your name, please?
Peggy Browning.
David Browning had worked at Brighton University for years. He was steady. He was married. He had kids. You know, he went to work every day, came home every day. He seemed to live just a normal life.
In fact, maybe, you know, just so normal, the epitome of 9-to-5 family man. He's just a completely regular guy.
When Jill House started working in his department, I get the impression that they clashed a little to start with, or that he didn't, you know, perhaps it's the shock of the new, but he wasn't, you know, perhaps as welcoming as he might have been. My suspicion is she dealt with that fairly quickly and kindly.
But behind the scenes, David was struggling with the death of his father.
He lost his father and fell into a depression, it seems.
Loss is a part of life, isn't it? And people deal with things in different ways, but this completely destroyed him. And that sort of spiralled him into depression.
He turned to Jill House for help and support. She became a shoulder to cry on. She became someone he turned to. And as a good, kind, caring, compassionate person, she listened, was supportive, both as a boss, but also, I think, probably as a friend too. She was obviously a good listener, and she took time out, even outside work, to basically comfort him and help him through his grief.
They started becoming sort of friends outside of work as well, going for drinks at pubs. He would have dinner at her house, and it did sort of turn into just complete infatuation on his side.
Somehow, over that period, those feelings grew and became focused in an unhealthy way. He seems to have wanted more from what I'll call that relationship, you know, that relationship of boss and member of staff. Went away on holiday and bought her a gift. He didn't tell his wife.
It's just extraordinary how quickly things changed in his life. Two children, a wife. You've led this life for 24 years. Why do you want things to be different by pursuing this relationship with your boss? But she's so nice as well that she didn't approach it in a way that, I don't want this, leave me alone. You know, she was let him down gently, if that would be the right phrase, because she still wanted to help him. This was a man who, for what he said, was really depressed, understandably, at the loss of his father. And she wanted to help, but wanted to detach that romantic side of things, which he clearly couldn't let go.
I think she handled things, you know, reasonably well, but she was unfortunately dealing with somebody who wasn't reasonable, it turned out. And while I think you'd be hard-pressed to say there were mixed signals, I do think she was clear that this wasn't going anywhere other than as a friendship and a professional relationship, those two things. But that didn't stop David Browning from hoping for something else. And it's almost as though, it's not that he didn't get the message, I don't think he wanted to hear the message. I think when it came home to him that actually he didn't stand a chance with Jill Howes in the way that he wanted, pride was hurt.
The one-way relationship grew quickly, and on the night of October 25th, David and Jill had made plans. But while Jill's involved food, David had something far more sinister in mind.
David Browning went around to Jill's house for a curry. They'd arranged this. In the meantime, he'd hired a van, put a shotgun in there, having only got the shotgun license and bought the weapon itself fairly recently. He'd also bought a great big hunting knife, had that with him, and took that into Jill's home, where she'd invited him for a curry and a bottle of wine. And again, I think ostensibly to support him, to provide emotional support. I suspect ostensibly still treating him as somebody who was grieving for the loss of his father, but certainly as a supportive colleague as well, and boss. And he has realised by this time this isn't going anywhere, and he has decided she must die.
In 2017, police in Brighton had sealed off a property after the grim discovery of a body. The victim was Gillian Howes, a popular local woman who had apparently been the victim of a stabbing. In the months before her death, Gillian had grown closer to a work colleague. The man was David Browning, a regular 9-to-5 guy who had recently been struggling with the death of his father. And on the night of October 25th, David and Jill had made plans. But while Jill's involved food, David had something far more sinister in mind.
David Browning said that after dinner, he'd spoken with Jill Howes and that it had come across, you know, that he needed help. And so she was going to take him to hospital to seek help for his mental health. What happened next was appalling. As she bent down to tie up her shoes so that she could drive him to hospital to get help for him, he plunged a knife into the back of her neck, into the sort of shoulder, back of her neck, and then stabbed her several more times, I think 15 times in total, in the neck, chest, stomach. And she desperately tried to fight him off. She bravely tried she had what are called defensive wounds in her hands as she was trying to keep him at bay. After Jill Howes has died, he spent the next few hours in her home. He put a picture on Facebook, something along the lines of, you have to stand up to bullies, you know, they must die, with a lance going through somebody. He scrawled the word bully on her forehead, and I don't think anybody would suggest that she was a bully.
It's really mind-boggling that someone could do something like this.
But David Browning wasn't finished.
David Browning called the Samaritans. He knew, I'm sure he knew, Jill Howes was a Samaritan. And again, I don't know whether this is a kind of gloating behaviour or a kind of, you know, it just seems very odd and very bizarre.
I think they told him to, contact the police. And then it went from there, really. He tried to hand himself in at the John Street police station in Brighton.
Sussex Police, what's your emergency?
Hi, I need to be sectioned under the Mental Health Act. I'm at John Street police station, but I can't seem to get in there to speak to somebody.
OK.
So is it possible for us...
Have you called Have you called an ambulance?
No, I don't need an ambulance.
If you need to be sectioned, then that's the best place people to be with is the ambulance.
Well, I've got a shotgun in my hand, so it's probably not the best idea. It's not loaded, and it's covered, and it's safe.
But I tried to commit suicide and I want to hand it in.
Okay. No, that's fine. You didn't say that. That's the place to be then, isn't it? The police station. What's your name, please?
Lady Browning.
Okay. And you're outside the police station now?
Yeah. In the car park where all the vans are.
Okay.
There's more to it than that, but I'll just explain that when I speak to an officer.
The call was being made from an emergency phone fixed to the city police station. Now the police upstairs had to act quickly and find out what David Browning was trying to tell them.
Tell what's happened.
In a nutshell, I've killed my boss.
Killed your boss? Where have you killed him? Come on, could you write it down for me?
Yeah, front door's left open.
Okay.
As you go in,
yeah,
there's some shotgun shells on the table.
Okay.
Two boxes.
Okay.
Two full boxes.
Right.
Not used.
Okay. Here's somebody who has just done the most atrocious thing. And yet at the same time, he's almost quite orderly and sort of like rational and kind of like, you know, methodical. Almost as if a switch has gone again and it's back to, you know, Mr. Payroll Clerk.
Front door's left open.
Okay.
As you go in,
yeah,
there's some shotgun shells on the table.
Okay.
Two boxes.
Okay.
Two full boxes.
Right.
He tells them where Jill's home is, that he's left a door on the latch, that there's a van, a rental van, parked in the street.
No worry about what might happen to him because he's done this. Just no tears. He's not upset. He's taken a close friend of his from himself. You know, you think you're upset, maybe he's still angry, but nothing.
David, based on what you've told us, okay, the time is now 6:20 a.m. I'm arresting you on suspicion of murder. Okay, you didn't have to say anything, but mayhem and defence. If you do not mention one question, something which you later on in court, anything you do say may be given evidence.
David Browning was now under arrest on suspicion of murder, and police soon discovered that his claims were true.
Detectives searching the home of his boss, Jill Howell, made the grim discovery of her body in the kitchen. She had been stabbed several times, apparently over dinner. They had a confession that David was her killer, but they needed to understand why. Once again, close attention would be paid to a killer's mental health.
People accused of murder sometimes say they killed the victim, but they were mentally unwell. Their plea is it was manslaughter on the ground of diminished responsibility. David Browning's plea was that he was one of those people.
I didn't believe it. It was premeditated. He'd had thoughts of killing her 2 weeks before. And decided this was going to be the night that he wanted to do it. And he actually said that he's going to kill himself afterwards as well. Had a shotgun, hired that out days before it happened, had it in the back of a van that he hired out, and he's going to shoot himself in the back of the van. But in the end, he didn't want to do that, but just he killed Jill instead.
I didn't believe that he was out of his mind. In terms of the way he'd acted, with quite a degree of planning, to be honest. And so I didn't buy it, no. And you kind of hope that a jury will see through somebody who has behaved in that way and is trying to effectively get a better outcome for themselves, having behaved in an appalling way.
When he's given evidence, no emotion, the same look on his face. Absolutely no remorse. When it came out that he'd scrawled bully on her forehead, one of the jurors actually cried at the detail that had been revealed. That would sum up the atmosphere. Just this is so emotional because of who Jill was. She was a Samaritan, couldn't do a bad thing. So I think the jurors understood that as well.
After lengthy trial, David Browning was found guilty and given a life sentence with a minimum of 28 years behind bars.
David Browning is obviously evil enough to have killed somebody and taken the life of somebody who actually cared for him and was kind to him. He's not a serial killer. He's not in the top rank of sort of gruesome, evil murderers by any means. If anything, he's anonymous, bland, and cruel. Jill Howes lost her life, really, because she was such a kind person and was giving her time and help to somebody who had turned to her in a time when he was down. I can't begin to imagine the grief of Jill's family at losing somebody who they knew how kind and lovely she was, but I hope what they will have seen from the response after her death was just how many people spoke up about what an amazing, caring and kind woman that she was. I just hope they can take some small comfort from that.
Every murder case is shocking and tragic, but there are some murders which offer little in the way of explanation. In Brighton, two killers struck just 2 years apart, and in both cases, their motives were far from clear. Both knew their victim, and both made emotional confessions, but both failed to explain why they'd felt the need to kill. And now both are serving life behind bars.